entrepreneur and Apprentice Season 2 winner, Kelly Perdue. Kelly, welcome back to the FDH Lounge. How are you tonight, my man?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Oh, fine, thanks. Fine, thanks. I think we're all doing a little better. Everybody's got a little bit more lift in their steps since what we found out Sunday night. And as I say, I'm very grateful to have you on to discuss this here tonight. As somebody who, again, as I touched on in the intro, has the kind of special ops training that you did. Additionally, as I understand it, serving as a military intelligence officer, what were some of the things going through your head, or at least some of the declassified things you can talk about, but what were some of your reactions as you've learned about how this came together in the last 48 hours?
Well, certainly there was a surge of a bunch of emotions, proud, excited, happy for all the people who've been impacted, you know, some in very, very serious ways by the terrorist attacks that transpired, you know, 10 years ago. Certainly for all of the military members who've been out there on the front lines during that time period, as well as all their family members, because it really takes their toll. I have friends who served, you know, four tours and special forces in Afghanistan, you know, training and practicing and going after and doing these types of, you know, raids at, you know, various levels of success, you know, all of that stuff classified. Even I don't know what the results of them are, but the I guess the willpower, the expertise, the professionalism, and just the patriotism to continue to do that while, you know, we spend a lot of our time in our day-to-day activities, whether it be, you know, building fantasy sports games like we do at Fast Point Games or doing radio shows or whatever it might be. And, you know, sometimes I feel like it's not quite the most noble calling when I know a lot of my colleagues and friends are out there putting their life in harm's way to make it safe so that we can do those things. So I'm just incredibly grateful to the men and women in armed forces and their family members for all that they give up to create this way of life for us.
Well, Kelly, that's all the more reason that we're grateful tonight that you're disseminating some of this for us. I think it helps for people to understand what goes into this and how something like this comes about, some of the different aspects to it. I think public understanding really leads to more public appreciation, certainly, and hopefully lasting appreciation. I'd like to ask you about one of the elements that's come out in the last day or so here, as we've heard about some of the things that happened previously here as a result, as they were going into some of the final stages of preparation for it, specifically the replication of the compound, the way that they were able to do that to the greatest extent possible as a means of preparing for what it was going to be like when they got into Pakistan. Is that a fairly common thing with special forces to go to that kind of trouble for it? I understand it wouldn't be like on every mission, but on the big missions, do things like this tend to happen fairly frequently?
Well, anytime you can prepare, you know, down to the nth degree for what you're going into, the more familiar you are with the situation, the more testing you can do, the more run-throughs where you contemplate different scenarios, you know, just like in business, right? The more of those that you can train, plan, and prepare for, the more likely you are to succeed in whatever it is you're going to try to do. And no... And forgive me because I don't know who the quotation belongs to, but no plan survives first contact with the enemy. Mm-hmm. And I want to say it was a Civil War general, but I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm sure somebody could Google it in 30 seconds. But that's the truth. You never know exactly what's going to occur, but familiarity with every single component of the mission, lighting, weather, terrain, buildings, population, you know, language, linguistics, reaction, coloring of clothing, every single one of those things that's known beforehand can help increase the likelihood of success of a mission. And we have the ability to, you know, reach just about anywhere with satellites and various other intelligence systems. So if we know exactly where we're going to be going, it certainly helps for planning and executing. And again, and I've been out of the military for quite a while, so I'm sure those capabilities have grown dramatically.
I'm sure there's been an evolution over time. Yeah, these methods and everything like that. Yeah, I guess that stands to reason what you're saying, that these things would continue to evolve and take on new forms over time, while of course remaining true to a lot of the core principles. This mission like this is really almost unprecedented. And unfortunately, the nearest precedent that anybody could think of, particularly with the helicopter malfunction at the outset, was the failed mission 31 years ago to rescue the hostages in Iran. I have to surmise, and I was fairly young at the time, but had that one succeeded, I think you would have had the same embrace. I think America certainly appreciated their fallen in there. I should rephrase that. But in terms of them coming back to heroes welcomes, potentially that would have been the case. And you're hearing a lot of stuff now. I saw on Twitter Sunday night a whole lot of stuff about the guy who shot Bin Laden will never have to buy a beer again ever in his life. So how does something like this go as far as the declassification of it, as far as the individuals involved? There's a tremendous hunger by the American public to know these Navy SEALs specifically, but I have to think that at the very least for operational purposes and in terms of military tradition and whatnot, we may not get too much of the specifics on the folks involved. Am I correct?
It's going to be, whether something leaks or doesn't leak or whatever happens, with the continuing advances in technology and the ability for word to spread so quickly, and, who can say what's going to occur? I think it's unlikely that anything stays secret for very long these days. Mm-hmm. However, I would rather focus on kind of the team mentality that exists. And I can't speak, firsthand of SEAL teams, but in Ranger battalions and in every major unit inside the military and military organizations, there's very much a team effort. So no individual typically feels like, they got there by themselves. They identified the target by themselves. In this instance, terminated a target and came back, without an incredibly large group effort. The other components to this that are, there's so many layers to it, right? From the, high level of politics and strategy around what's going on with Pakistan, down to, the politics that exist inside the United States, decision-making on timing of what's going to occur and what's not going to occur, how the message is conveyed to the public, which units are involved, which units are selected to be involved. All of those things, there are reasons why the decisions are made the way they are, and a lot of them occur very, very quick, have to occur very, very quickly, depending upon the, the window closing on opportunities. And I want to come back to, just hats off to our country for keeping focused on trying to make sure and ensure that we're not going to allow people to, into our country and strike terror at the heart of it like they did without any ramification. And we just don't give up.
Absolutely. And you raised a great point. I'm glad that you did. I'm glad that you made the point there of clarification that while we're glorifying the individuals involved in the Navy SEALs, and justifiably so, they're not. That's not what they're made of, and they're not looking for recognition. So I'm glad that you made that point for me there, because it's a very good one. In terms of your background in military intelligence, I have to ask you, because one of the big questions that's out there now, everybody's looking at the situation and shaking their heads. I mean, obviously we've known to whatever degree over time Pakistan has been playing a double game here, the full nature of which I think has been pretty starkly exposed here. The fact that this guy was roused a couple blocks from their version of West Point. I mean, for somebody like you with your background in this, I mean, those of us that are laymen, we're kind of shocked by the degree of this. But I mean, for somebody who's dealt with military intelligence before, is this shocking even for you, or have you seen a fair amount of situations of a country really speaking out of both sides of its mouth like this?
Well, there are, as I said, many layers to the decision-making process and what's known, what's allowed to occur, what's not allowed to occur. And, any war or significant altercation, such as what's going on right now, has all of those dynamics at play. So what I think is, again, the biggest emphasis or the biggest point we should focus on right now is that, our military executed, and I want to say, nothing happens flawlessly, but did just a phenomenal job at execution, which is what they were directed to go do. Trained for it, had the mettle to do it, and there's people that are still willing to stand up and volunteer into our armed forces and go stand in the way while the rest of us enjoy the protection of the freedoms and can carry on our lives with our families. And hopefully everybody thinks about that. This wasn't, like I said, the people that were there weren't there for a day. They just went over to do this. They've been there for years and years now, away from their family, away from their loved ones, going out and doing something that they think is incredibly important for our country. The selflessness point that you pointed out is tantamount. I would bet, certainly there's probably some excitement level of being able to have trained and finally be able to do what you've been training to do. But I think that there's little with no self glorification on the individuals that were actually involved, at the point of that spear, if you will. A little knowledge, I think, is a dangerous thing. You alluded to that, where there's a little bits and pieces of information that come out and more of it. And if you haven't studied the situation in depth or in detail, it's easy to jump to conclusions and become pretty upset about what's going on. But there's just so many variables involved that you really have to, if you really want to get engaged and study and learn everything about what's happening with Pakistan, about what's happened with this war, inside of our own decision-making process and everything else, there's plenty of information out there to get your head around before you, snap to any judgments about how or when decisions were made.
Oh, good point. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's a point worth making, and that you can always stand to benefit for more perspective, and it is nothing if not a complex situation in that government over there, particularly when you look at a lot of the anti-Americanism in the population that they have to deal with. So point well taken on that, Kelly. I have to say also, I was surprised to learn something in the last day or two. I didn't realize the extent to which in the last couple of years here, particularly with the wars going on in Afghanistan and Iraq, the extent to which we already had been expanding special forces as much as we were, because I remember a political controversy a couple of years ago that there were some politicians, and I'm not going to say from which party because I don't want to make this a partisan issue here, but there were some politicians that wanted to set what was more or less an artificial target for inflating the special forces, kind of like if we can do this much with these guys, think how much more we could do with twice the amount of special forces. And I was surprised to see that there already had been a fairly dramatic increase in recent years anyways. But I've always thought, ever since I heard about this proposal to set a target on the thing here, that, wait a minute, you could start watering down standards, and then the last thing you want is that the Rangers aren't really the Rangers anymore and the SEALs aren't really the SEALs anymore. Is there that kind of a danger that comes from anybody, whether there be a politician or anybody else of a lot of great influence, saying we need to take this number and double it as far as these forces go?
Well, I think that if you look historically at how the ebb and flow of support for the military in the United States has evolved, it definitely ebbs and flows. And at its root, or at its very base form, the military is a tool of foreign policy. And my position is that you want that tool to be as sharp as possible. It allows you to execute very well. And in the instances here, you're not talking about some dollars. You are talking about lots of dollars, but you're talking about something much more precious than that, and that's American lives. So you want it to be as efficient, effective as possible. So whatever, this is a very, very broad question. Goes to the infrastructure needed in place for training, the caliber of individuals that are involved from the recruiting process, what's happening in terms of wars, because when there's an active war in place, that can, obviously dramatically impact the ability to recruit. There are a lot of dynamic factors involved in determining the size of the military and what elements of that military are kind of the most required to be the most effective. So, every special forces individual and or unit that I've ever been around or involved with has the highest, absolute highest standard. And I think it would be tragic if we were to ever let that occur. And I don't know any soldiers, my classmates from West Point, anybody that I've served with, that would ever want that to occur. So I believe that our senior leadership in the military will do all that they can to ensure that, the civilian authority that, runs the military, and the commander-in-chief actually understands that specifically and would hopefully never allow that to occur.
Yeah, that is the bottom line non-negotiable principle. You're certainly right about that, Kelly, that whatever decisions are made, they cannot afford to water down the effectiveness of the special forces because they are so vital to us. As a means of starting here to segue to some of the things that you've been involved with directly entrepreneurially, Kelly, it also came to my attention from our senior producer that you had integrated some of this previously into your business background here with your book, Take Command, 10 Leadership Principles Learned in the Military and Put to Work for Donald Trump. I would like you to talk about that a little bit, how you've integrated your military background and the things you learned in the entrepreneurial sense. This sounds like a very interesting and very vital kit, particularly for people living in what might be unfortunately targeted terrorist areas.
Absolutely. My West Point classmate, Don Brewster, for years has built and designed training for U.S. military installations and embassies around the world on how to respond to attacks on those embassies. Very specific guidelines, checklist to prep and plan ahead of time, training that you can go through for that. And after winning The Apprentice and seeing kind of the exposure that I was able to have, and after, you know, the tragedy of 9/11, he actually approached me about helping get the word out about and, I guess, training or making available the same types of training and training materials that were for all of our, whether it be soldiers and or overseas embassies to the American public. So I guess the heart of it was really how do you combat terrorism? It's really going to the heart of it, which is fear. And a lot of fear is about the unknown. So if you have a plan and kind of knowing what you should do in certain situations, it would significantly alleviate a lot of that fear. So we incorporated much of their training modules that they give to the embassies outside the U.S. into an interactive CD-ROM, and I narrate the CD-ROM and helped get some more exposure for that. I was on Fox and a few other news channels about, I guess we did this a couple of years ago, and really promoted this terrorist attack survival kit, and it gave hopefully people some, you know, plans and real specific things that they could do to understand what happens if, you know, a dirty bomb goes off, what happens if there's a biological attack, it's a chemical weapon, what are the types of things that I should have prepared beforehand, real simple steps. Much, you know, similar to what people do. I'm in L.A., have an earthquake kit ready to go, right? Mm-hmm. If you live in a flood area, those types of things, or tornado, you've got a set of goods, a radio flashlight, those types of things. If you're in tornado country, wherever it might be. But in this instance, for very specific types of threats, and those threats by terrorists attacking through fear in the United States.
Well, these are definitely things that are going to be of value to some people. I'd like to mention also, too, Kelly, and I understand we have our next guest on the line here, so we'll be going right to her afterwards. But before we let you go, Kelly, I want to just see what's going on with Fast Point Games, Roto Hog. I understand you had some fun things going on with the NFL draft, some participatory fun for people there. So I know you guys are always on the cutting edge of fantasy sports games.
Absolutely. Well, on Facebook, we're running a salary cap style baseball game that you can play on a weekly basis, and it's cash competition, so you win cash prizes, and you know, you find it by, you know, searching for us either Fast Point Games or Salary Cap Baseball on Facebook. Actually, you can see how you're doing compared to your friends who aren't even in your league. So we've integrated some of the DNA of the social web into the game dynamic. So, and we'll be, you know, continue to introduce features around that. And we'll be rolling out hockey, basketball, and, fingers crossed, football here in the next 30 to 45 days.
Hopefully. What, you know, always good stuff on there. And, Kelly, again, thanks a lot for breaking everything down for us here tonight with your military experience and teaching us about some of the things involved with Special Forces. As I said at the outset, I've always sort of had a hunger for learning about these kinds of things, and I think there's probably a renewed hunger for a lot of people as there's been a lot of fascination and certainly appreciation for what went on Sunday in Pakistan there. Thank you so much, Kelly.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Looking forward to having you back on. Thanks. Don't be a stranger. Kelly Perdue, everybody. Always a pleasure to have him on the program.